What were you playing, Ron and Brian?
Go to Mexico.
What's that?
Ron and Brian go to Mexico.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 59 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I'm Ron, as always, joined by the man who is the real target in the attempted hit on David Ortiz, Brian. Brian, how are you holding up today?
I would say that I'm holding up pretty well. I mean, there's a lot of things going on in the world today, a lot of things that make me uncomfortable, a lot of things that bring me joy, some things that bring me pain. I think what's most important, and this is the thing that I carry with me on a day-to-day basis, is that I know once a week I get to sit here, stare into your blue eyes, and you romance me for 1 hour, make me feel that everything's going to be all right.
So would you say that it's joy and pain? Perhaps sunshine and rain?
And rain. Bring it on. Bring it on.
No one. After last week, I don't think anybody wants any more singing.
Whose song is that? Let's see if you remember.
That was, oh,
come
God.
Come on.
DJ Ad Rock. No, Easy Rock and...
Rob Bass.
Thank you.
I'm Rob Bass and I came to get down. I'm not internationally known, but I'm known to put a hit out on the microphone. Because right. I get... do want the music.
That's right. Well, let's give them some theme music. How about for your... what do we got coming up first here? Drink of the week.
Drink of the week.
Na zdrowie.
Salud.
Drink of the week.
Sláinte.
Prost.
Drink of the week.
Brian, talk to us about who our contenders were this week for Drink of the Week.
Well, I think that we were, you know, when it comes to the Drink of the Week, there's a lot of different things that come into play. Whenever we have the ability to tie Drink of the Week in to current events, it is both joy and pain. And with everything that's been going on in the Dominican Republic, last week we spent a large part of the show talking about the recent spat of American tourists that were falling ill and in some cases fatally passing away. And right after, the day after we recorded last week's episode, news started to leak that the number one theory as to what was happening to our American tourists and friends was that they suspected that the alcohol that was being served in these hotel rooms, in these fancy American resorts, was not the high quality spirits that you and I would be able to purchase in our
beer.
In our local liquor stores, but these were bootleg liquor, allegedly, and it's just a working theory. But one of the things that seemed to have happened was that a lot of the people that had passed had recently made drinks using their hotel mini bar. One of the things that interestingly came up was that in the hotel rooms was not the small sample size bottles that, much like the one I'm holding up right now to you, Ron,
yes,
a little Bombay Sapphire.
Little airline-sized bottle, not those kind.
No, well, you know, the real stuff. But they would literally put bottles of liquor in hotel rooms for people to drink. Obviously, so the suspect is that they were using some bootleg alcohol. So in honor, and one of the things that Ron and I are, you know, we are the voice of the fallen. People who are not here to defend themselves, to speak up for themselves, they know that they can depend on the voice of Ron and Brian to defend their honor. So drink of the week this week, in honor of the Americans who've passed away drinking bootleg alcohol, Ron and I are drinking bootleg alcohol ourselves. The Facebook poll this week on our page was bootleg vodka versus bootleg whiskey. This was never a close race across the board, as bootleg whiskey won clearly 75% to 25%. The people wanted bootleg whiskey. Ron, clearly. What do you got lined up?
So what I did was I had a little SoCo. But, you know, that's expensive stuff. You don't want to waste it. You want to cut it with something. So I went out to my car. I got some coolant out of the engine to mix that in. And here's a little life hack for you. If you don't want to water down your drinks, take your mixer and freeze it. So I froze the coolant to use as ice cubes in my SoCo and then added a little bit of lime and a little bit of cola. So cheers to you.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, now see, that's one thing. Oh, we went differently. How's it going down?
I mean, it burns a bit. Right off the bat, my vision is blurred. But you know, we'll fight through it and we'll
all right.
move forward. How did you mix yours up?
What I did was one of my favorite drinks is the Jack and Coke. So in honor of the bootleg whiskey, what I did was I went to a neighborhood called Washington Heights here in New York, which is very popular amongst the Dominican Republic expatriates. So I went up there and I said to them, listen, if I were looking for a bottle of Jack Daniels, but I wanted some of your local stuff, what would I get? So they introduced me to this brand called Juan Daniels.
Not made,
yes, no, the label looks very similar to Jack Daniels, but instead of being fine Kentucky whiskey, this is actually San Pedro de Macarís whiskey. And I will say this, it doesn't have that sweetness that a Tennessee whiskey really does put out. It tastes more like what I would consider a Wisconsin whiskey or a North Dakota whiskey. It's got a bite.
Okay.
There's a definite bite, but there's also this subtle sense of, how would I describe this? It's like drinking paint thinner that's been cut. It's weird. It's like if you had paint thinner and you cut it with a floor cleaner. It's an odd combination. I'm going to tell you, you mix that with a little Coca-Cola, and when it comes to mixers, I don't go cheap. I went with real Coca-Cola. So I've got my Juan Daniels, I've got my Coca-Cola, put a little bit of lime juice on top. I'm going to tell you something instantly. I'm regretting every sip of this. as I feel my esophagus melting, literally as the seconds tick by, I have already started secreting a black liquid out of my anus. Might need to change my underwear mid-show. If I survive the episode, I will be calling urgent care.
All right. Well, you've painted quite a picture there, and I hope you enjoy your beverage. So, as always, if anybody out there, if any listeners have any suggestions for drinks or themes for Drink of the Week, hit up the Facebook page, Instagram, Twitter, or go to our website, RonandBrianPodcast.com, and help us out. And then obviously check on Facebook and Twitter for the poll. In the meantime, let's check out what we have in This Week in Racism.
This
week
in
racism.
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 And I gotta say, Brian, I owe a big apology to Days In Dave. I had sent him to the bench a few weeks back thinking he wasn't a strong contender compared to some of the other people we have. The committee, the wise bracketology committee, put him back in to go up against Kickapoo High School Racists last week, and he bulldozed him over. 71% to 29% for win number 3. So Days In Dave is going up another week. He's going for win number 4 for retirement and getting that number 1 seed. Brian, your thoughts on the vote from this past week?
I think the lesson learned here, Ron, is that we have to go with the bracketology committee. Once again, I believe it was an instance where you stepped in, you felt that Dave that Dave did not have the goods. I believe that universally, having spoken to the members of the committee, they were all behind Dave's and Dave. They were around from the first week of this podcast that we started over 25 years ago, listening to the level of anger that he brought, the fact that the man was working on the clock, insulting a customer, insulting a guest. Universally, the committee sat there and said, this guy is making it to the year-end bracket. Don't kick him out. Let's bring him back. He's got legs. He's got a lot of anger, but he's also got legs. So I think the lesson here is that you and I need to take our personal beliefs out, step aside, trust the committee, trust the process.
No question. So let's see who Days in Dave potentially is going up against this week. We had a few stories that we were considering down in Oxford, Mississippi. There was a group of African-American women who went through the drive-thru of a Houdat's, which is a Cajun restaurant in Oxford, apparently. When they got their order, the receipt had a note at the top that read, quote, black bitches in a silver car. The employee in question that typed that comment in has since been fired. Staying in the South, North Charleston, South Carolina, an employee at Boeing's manufacturing plant has filed a lawsuit against the company alleging racial harassment and intimidation going back to 2017. Curtis Anthony claims that white coworkers began using the N-word in his presence and also peed on his chair and desk. In February, he found
Hold on a second. Yes. Not to interrupt you, but that's exactly what I'm about to do.
Of course.
Now, obviously, you can. You cannot put yourself in the mind of an African American male. The experience is too different. But just say you could, theoretically, hypothetically, what would you have more of an issue with? Somebody calling you the N-word, or somebody peeing on your office seat? Because I imagine he does not have one of those waterproof chairs. I believe he's got one of those like cloth with the padding that just soaks it all up.
It's a tough call, but I would say you can always get a new desk and chair. You can't take words back, Brian. That's my little thought for the day.
You know what? I see where you're coming from, but I got to disagree with you. I think it's such an alpha move to pee on somebody else's possessions.
That is true. I'll give you that. Agree to disagree, as always.
We don't have to agree.
That's right. Now, in February, he found a noose hanging over his desk. That, I think, is worse than the other two. The employee that did that was fired, but Anthony contends that Boeing has done nothing additional over the years to promote a safe working environment, so he has filed this lawsuit against Boeing. Out in Phoenix, Arizona, I'm sure everybody has seen the video this past week. Police were recorded pulling their guns on an African-American family after their four-year-old daughter took a doll from a Family Dollar store. Way over the top, the Phoenix mayor has already apologized to the family. Apparently, Jay-Z is offering free legal counsel to the family as they are going to file suit against the city and the police department. So we'll keep following up on that. But our
apparently
contender...
apparently they've got 99 problems, but Barbie's not one.
You are correct. But our contender this week coming from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Ooh,
in a case of shopping while black, Michael Means, owner of Funwear Sports in the Myrtle Beach Mall, called security and threatened to call police on a group of black men that were shopping in his store. College professor Chris Carraway had taken his sons and some of his sons' friends on a senior week trip to Myrtle Beach, which included a stop at the mall. Carraway stated that Means started to watch all of them as soon as they entered the store, telling them at one point to stay together because he couldn't keep an eye on them at one time. Carraway's son then shot some video of the owner. This was the owner yelling at them as they were looking through his store.
Nobody touch anything unless you want to buy.
So, always makes you feel welcome. And then this is the call to the mall security.
Michael at Funwear Sports, I've got a group of about eight people
seven.
In here that's causing a problem.
I mean, so the drawl is always a dead giveaway. But Carraway also stated after mall security came and removed them from the store that they noticed that white customers in the store did not receive anything near the same level of treatment that he, his family, and his son's friends did.
Sounds pretty racist. I don't know. I just don't see how he stands a chance against Days and Dave.
Hold on a second.
Nobody touch anything unless you want it back.
I'm just throwing, I just want to play that one more time. It's such a hick sounding voice, but
give me
I agree.
One more time. Give me
nobody
that time.
Touch anything unless you want it back.
Unless you want back.
Which is funny because that is the thing that my priest said to the altar boys when we would go into the rectory.
Is it now?
Yes, yes.
All right.
But he didn't say unless you want to buy. He said unless you want to be molested.
So a little bit of a difference there.
Don't nobody touch nothing unless you want to get molested.
Mm-hmm. So we'll have Michael Means going up against Days in Dave. I kind of have to agree with you a little bit. I think Days in Dave gets his fourth win this week. But as always, the votes are going to decide. So go to our Facebook page or our Twitter page or both and place your votes in This Week in Racism. Moving along, we've got our Beefs of the Week.
Ron and Brian. Beef of the Week.
Brian, what's bothering you this week, my friend?
I'll tell you what's bothering me. It is I was exposed this past week to a phenomenon that's going on through America where people think they know better than what they are instructed to do.
Okay.
This past week, I was listening to a podcast, and I know I don't normally, we shouldn't be drawing attention to our competitors, but I was listening to a podcast, and it's a current events with a humorous take, kind of it's similar to ours.
Okay.
And one of the members of the podcast was complaining about his Windows laptop that he was using, and how it was draining all the resources on his laptop to the point where he was having difficulty operating open programs, it was just his machine was completely slowed. And one of the things he mentioned in the podcast was that he had restarted his laptop during a Windows update and ignored the screen that said, do not turn off machine during update. And he actually had forced a close on the laptop, then opened it up and was surprised and shocked that his laptop wasn't working in good condition. And that's my beef of the week right now. It's people who think they know better than machines, because anybody with half a brain knows that when Windows is updating, you take a step back, let it do what it needs to do. And this way you don't have to spend a week cursing your laptop, thinking about throwing it out the window, getting frustrated, cursing at family members that you live with, taking your aggression out on people who have who are not even linked to this. Before going on to Google, spending at least an hour doing Google searches before realizing that what happened is that the Windows update is running in the background trying to update, but it's locked. And what it needs to be done is it needs to be closed out through the settings. And anybody with half a brain would have known that.
No, of course. It sounds, I almost feel like I listened to a similar podcast because it sounds like something I heard last week as well. But
well, you and I have very similar tastes.
We do.
In terms of entertainment. So I would not be surprised. What's your beef, Ron? What's getting your goat?
I'm not quite sure how to qualify this. I want to say it's small business, but I think it's more consumer shaming, perhaps. Mm. So just to tell you my frustration from this past week is, you know, we have this new small business coffee shop / ice cream / crepe place that opened up. And one thing about my little community here is, yes, you seem to have a question.
Is this near where you work or near where you live?
Near where I live. It's a,
okay.
It's a within walking distance. It serves La Colombe coffee, which is fantastic. So, you know, it's good place to go.
Is this the place that he brews top notch quality coffee?
Yes.
Got it.
So I had to get a little breakfast on this past Saturday. So I go
Oy
down.
Vey.
What's that?
Oy vey.
So, and I was saying, I live in kind of a community where it's very big on pushing the small business owner and really people looking down the nose at people that don't support the small businesses. For example, we had a co-op market across the street from where this coffee shop is that ended up closing down earlier in the year. And people were like, oh, it's because all you other people couldn't support the co-op. And a lot of us who would shop the co-op occasionally, but not a lot, were like, well, number one, I don't want to spend $8 for an orange every week. And number two, it really sucked and the employees sucked as well. So I think that's my beef is small businesses that don't realize that they still need to provide good service. So okay. I go to this coffee shop because I'm going to get a coffee and a crepe. Yeah, a little different. Support small business. So I walk in. It's in two sections. You got the crepe and the ice cream is on one side of the store. So I go over, speak to the young lady behind the crepe counter, tell her what I want to order. I see she's making some crepes. So I understand it's going to be a couple minutes for my crepe. I'm like, no problem. I'll go get my coffee. Can I ring up everything over there or over here? She's like, not a problem. You can pay for everything at whatever register you want. Okay, fantastic. So I walk over to the side where the coffee is. So now there's a kid behind the counter there.
And What's the ethnicity of the kid?
I don't know that really matters. So
okay.
I get in line. Literally, I'm the first person in line. There's somebody sitting down, and he clearly has ordered something that needs to be brewed. So now this kid is setting up the coffee machine to brew coffee. Okay. And I don't know, he was probably 16, 17, 18 years old, moving at the speed of a 90-year-old.
Now, does he look like somebody who would enjoy a piece of bacon?
He does. Yes, he's probably probably a pack or two in the morning. But he is. Okay. So I'm standing there, and he has not greeted me or even acknowledged that my presence. So he's just trying to brew this pot of coffee. And so, you know, initially I'm the only person in line. Now there's like 3-4 people behind me. So finally, after literally like 2 or 3 minutes, he finally manages to get the thing brewing. And he comes up to me and he's like, can I help you? And I'm just like, I just want a large coffee. And he's like, yeah, cream. Normally at this place, it means, do you want a little room for cream? Because they've got every milk under the sun. And cream, soy milk, almond milk, goat milk, the whole nine yards.
Man milk.
Exactly. So he goes over and he starts pumping the coffee. And it doesn't look like he puts a lot in. But I'm like, all right, maybe it's just my point of view. And then he takes like this jug of milk and just like pours it, fills it to the top, caps it and gives it to me. So I'm like, all right. So I take the top off and it's white. It's whiter than I am. And that's saying something.
And we know how much you hate white things. We know that you just despise white things. You like things to be more of a top.
So,
a taupe.
So I'm like, all right.
Or a top.
Again, give the kid the benefit of the doubt. Maybe it's still fine to drink. Maybe it's something like cafe au lait. I don't care. So I take a sip, and he's put so much milk in it that it's now like it's room temperature, which is just horrible. So I'm like,
sounds like a passive aggressive kid.
So I'm like, do you have any, like, can I get like hot coffee? And he's just kind of looking at me, and I'm like, well, what are you brewing there? He's like, it's decaf. I'm like, all right. But I'm like, well, can I get hot coffee? Can you pour it? So he takes my cup and he goes over to try and put more coffee in the cup that he's already filled half with milk. And I'm like, no. I'm like, I just want like a new cup of coffee. Meanwhile, the guy who was behind me, who's now at the counter, there's like a line of 8 people behind him. He looks at me. He's like, is it even worth me trying? I'm like, I don't know. We're going to find out in a second. So he starts to, he fills it up, and you can see steam coming out of the coffee. So it's clearly just a result of his milk issue. So he fills it up to the point that he had filled it up before when he loaded it up with cream and tries to hand it to me. So now I've got a large coffee that's filled halfway. I'm like, I'm like, I don't need that much space for cream. You put too much cream in, just fill it up close to the top. I just want a splash of cream. I'll be fine. So finally I get my coffee. Now the crepe girl comes over because she sees this tremendous line happening here. And she's like, I can help you out. She's going to the kid. I'll help you out. I'll help you out with this line. So I'm like, all right, maybe my crepe is waiting over there. So I go back to the crepe counter. No crepe, nothing cooking at all. So I come back And she's like, oh, go over to the crepe counter and make him his crepe. So the kid that couldn't get me a cup of coffee is now going to be the kid in charge of making my crepe. I'm like, you know what? I'm good with the coffee. Y'all have a good day.
You paid for the crepe?
I had not paid for the crepe. Well, that was the one thing I forgot to mention. When I asked the kid, I'm like, look, I'm ordering a crepe over here. Can I pay for the crepe and the coffee right here? And he was like, no, I can only bring you up for the coffee.
And this is why stores go out of business.
Exactly.
It's all about the customer experience. And if people enjoy the experience of walking into a store, ordering something that is being sold and being provided a service that is quality, being provided a product that is quality, they will come back.
Right.
If you are going to have people walk in and walk out frustrated, then you have not only lost a customer, but you've also lost anybody they've spoken to about this store. And what I'm going to say is, why don't you put them on blast? Put them on blast right here on America's Podcast. Ron, what is the name of this store?
Listen, I will say this. I've been there a few times before when I haven't had the issue. I'm going to give them, everybody gets one. I'm going to give them one opportunity to say maybe this was just a bad day for them. So I'm not going to put them on blast this time. Next time, however, I promise I will.
All right. We just, I think it's moments like this when I think we need to use the power of the microphone and we need to start exposing the businesses that are not doing well. I think next time something like this happens, I think you have to literally pull the kid aside and be like, do you know who I am? Do you know who I am?
I will do that next time, and I will slap a sticker on his forehead just so he understands who I am.
Slide a sticker over and be like, I'm Ron. And I've got a massive Twitter following. I've got one of the fastest growing independent podcasts in this entire nation. I mean, let's face it. If we were on a network, if we had sold out to a podcast network, if we had, you know, decided to accept sponsors months ago when they first came clamoring to us, we would have the tens of thousands of downloads a week. But that's not what we wanted to do.
We wanted to grow it naturally.
I want to own the podcast. I do not want to sell it to a network and then have to pay to be able to use the name of our podcast. No, we are an independent podcast, so we want to support independent stores. You need to start using the power of your microphone.
All right. Well, let's.
Because you clearly are not going to use the power of your wallet because you're going to go back.
We'll see.
Hello. I would like a crepe.
I'm not going for a crepe again, especially if the big kid's there.
Get a muffin. Get a muffin.
Let's use our microphone to speak some truth to power, Brian. Are you ready for a little history?
Of course.
All right.
Horrible. History.
And one of our more popular bits that we rolled out about a month ago, highlighting some of the things that have happened in our nation's history that we shouldn't be overly proud about. Donald Trump has tweeted this week about how next week INS is going to be deporting, quote, millions and millions of illegal immigrants. However, this is not the first time in this country's history that this has happened. Brian, are you familiar with a program back in the 50s called Operation Wetback?
Yes, Ron, I am familiar with Operation Wetback. It was right after the original Stonewall Uprising. It was a group of protesters who in the Greenwich Village area of New York City used to play this game where they would run up to guys who were not walking in the streets without shirts on, and they would rub a wet towel over these gentlemen's backs. It was called Operation Wetback.
You might be confused yet again. Wetback actually is a disparaging term that was applied to illegal entrants to this country who supposedly entered the U.S. by swimming the Rio Grande. The term eventually was applied to all Mexican laborers, including those that were legal residents. Operation Wetback actually was an immigration law enforcement initiative created by Joseph Swing, the director of the INS, in cooperation with the Mexican government. It is a program that was implemented in 1954 to deal with illegal border crossings into the U.S. by Mexican nationals. To really get an idea as to why Operation Wetback came around, you have to go back to 1942 to the Bracero program. I'm not going to ask you if you're familiar with that or not, because I'm afraid what you might say. So
it actually is a cut of meat that you will find in Argentinian steakhouses.
Is it?
Quite popular in Buenos Aires. It really is a combination of a thinly sliced mushroom grilled with onions. And here's the kicker, pig fat.
Okay.
You cook all that up in pig fat, and then it's placed over a specific slice of beef.
I think the Juan Daniels might be affecting your brain.
Juan Daniels, well, I'm going to say this to you. I'm not even sure who I am anymore. I think my name is Rodrigo, but I'm not sure.
So the Bracero program, during World War II, the U.S. and Mexican governments developed this program, which allowed Mexican laborers to work in the U.S. under short-term contracts in exchange for stricter border security and the return of illegal immigrants to Mexico. Instead of providing military support to the U.S. and its allies, Mexico would provide laborers to the U.S. with the understanding that border security and illegal labor restrictions would be taken care of by the United States. So in its time, 2 million Mexican nationals participated in the Bracero program, but the program could not accommodate the number of Mexican nationals that wanted to come work in the U.S. Many who were denied work under this program ended up entering the country illegally. In addition, many U.S. companies became frustrated with the bureaucracy surrounding the program, which drove them to hire those that were entering the country illegally. So that really led to a spike in illegal immigration. So in the 50s, you know, President Eisenhower had an opportunity to use federal troops at the border to combat this. He opted not to. He turned the control of the border over to Joseph Swing and the INS, and that was where Operation Wetback started. It started it in early 1954, but was not formally announced to the public until May of 1954. So in that first year, there was 1,074,277 returns between those that the U.S. removed and those that left on their own under fear of being arrested and deported. That number fell to 242,608 in 1955 and continued to decline into the early 60s. Despite this decline, the total number of border agents had doubled by 1962. One of the biggest problems of this program was that the deportees were sent to unfamiliar parts of Mexico where they would struggle to find their way home or find work to support their families. Those apprehended were usually deported before given an opportunity to reclaim their property in the U.S. or contact their families. And there were also reports of U.S. Border Patrol agents that would shave the heads of people that tried to cross the border repeatedly in order to better identify them, as well as reports of jailing and beating repeat offenders before deporting them. So as the old saying goes, those who do not learn from history are destined to repeat it. Hopefully that will not be the case in the coming week.
Let me ask you something,
yes,
if you don't mind.
Please.
How would you handle the issue of illegal immigration coming over our southern border? What would you do about this? Like, clearly, I think, and I think you and I are on the same page, mm-hmm, in the sense that I don't think either of us believe that Donald Trump and Stephen Miller are the individuals that should be setting America's agenda or setting our policy for handling illegal immigration. With that said, it's easy to bash these guys and say, "Oh, they're awful human beings, and they're just and they're terrible. But what would you do? What do you how do you solve this issue?
I don't know that it's an easy fix.
I'm not asking for an easy fix. I'm asking for if you were in charge, what would you do?
You know, we have, you know, laws and policies in place as far as how we're supposed to be handling people immigrating into this country, people seeking asylum. You know, I think the bigger issue that we're having right now is the treatment of those as they come across the border, the separation of families, the conditions that they're being forced to be kept in. You know, these you know, and there was a big argument this week over whether you can refer to these places as concentration camps or not. Meanwhile, you've had people that were in literal concentration camps saying, yeah, that's pretty much what the U.S. has created along the border is concentration camps of you know, immigrants and migrants. I think the easier thing to do would be to find a more humanitarian way to house these families and these individuals while, you know, their asylum and their immigration claims are processed. I don't think you need more soldiers. I don't think you need more border patrol agents. I don't think you need more of these camps. You know, and we're seeing the rampant corruption of, you know, the private companies that are making money off of this housing are, you know, your typical Republican donors that, you know, are being shipped all of these immigrants right now.
And they're also the same ones that are making money off the privatization of the prison programs.
Correct.
Which is that you need to have people in prison for these companies to make money. So it's to their benefit that people keep getting arrested and keep getting convicted. So I think you've got companies once again that are profiting off these immigrants. But I also don't. I believe that you should. I think this is where I think I take a somewhat more harsher stand. I think that we do have an obligation to protect our border, and in the sense of just because somebody says that they want to come to America, I don't think that there is that we should automatically take the position of, well, come on in, let's take responsibility for you while we figure out if we want you to stay or not.
So you're saying you kind of agree with the push in that Mexico should be holding on to these people while their asylum claims are processed?
I think that in a way, I think that we should be able to say, here is our border, we're standing on this side, and we're not just going to take you because you say you want to be here. I know that to a certain extent, we need to have illegal immigration. I think that we need to have labor in this country that is not subject to minimum wages and fair labor standards. I think we need to have people just from the economic model of this country. We need people that are going to work in farms for $3 a day. I think if America was suddenly to be asked to pay $25.98 for a head of lettuce, we'd be shocked and outraged. We're okay turning a blind eye to the fact that that most of the produce that is being provided to us is being obtained through illegal labor. But I don't think that I don't know that we should sit there and open and have such an open policy of come on in, we'll take care of you, it's going to be nice and comfortable. I feel like there's got to be some middle ground to being able to say, if you have legitimate grounds for coming to this country, then you will be welcomed. But the burden of proof should be on you to prove it before you get here.
Well, I can agree with that. But that's why I think the solution is more a case of the bodies that we need to be sending down to deal with the border crisis are more, you know, more of the lawyers, more of the judges, more of the social workers, more of the people that are equipped to handle this on a civil basis versus what it's become, which is a very militant, confrontational basis. So,
well, I think it's become a politicized talking point. I believe that you're looking at a president who feels that that this is literally his only legitimate issue. That if you were to take away the pronouncement that illegal immigration is this gigantic threat to this country, you're dealing with a president who does not have much to offer.
Right. Well, and if you look at what supporting, really...
He's not supporting his base. His base is a manufacturing class. His base is rural towns. His base is small towns. His policies have all been pro-corporation, pro-wealthy, and... the only thing that he has that speaks to this base is the idea that we need to build the wall because we need to. It's a gigantic distraction. I don't think there's this gigantic. I don't believe that there is this huge threat that our country is about to fall apart because of illegal immigration. I think it's hey, this is the one thing that gets the numbers that I need for support.
No doubt.
But that doesn't mean that there's not a problem there.
Right. If you look back to early 2015, you know, the point where he really started to, you know, skyrocket in the polls for the Republican primary was when he gave that little speech inside of Trump Tower about how Mexico was sending us their worst people and how,
right.
You know, so clearly he is, you know, as he begins his 2020 run, he is working from the same playbook that he did in 2016. You know, that's evidenced by how much he talked about Hillary Clinton last night. So it's like,
and yet I don't think that the Democrats and this idea of we need to be more compassionate, I don't know that that is the solution either.
I don't know that I think any loosening of what we're doing right now, we're being the least amount of compassion possible at this point.
We're lacking compassion.
If we scaled back and we're just neutral at this point, that would be a show of compassion compared to what we're currently doing.
I do think that we should address the reality of life in Central America. I think that what we have done is cut aid to these countries. I think these countries have allowed internal struggles to make the quality of life. I think the violence in these countries, the gangs, the drug problems in these countries have gone up in multiples over the past 10 plus years. That I think what you've got are people seeking asylum because there's gang violence in their country. I don't know that, in my opinion, warrants asylum to America.
But
I think that we should, I do believe that we should be supporting these countries with foreign aid that is being used properly to enhance the day-to-day life of people that quite possibly could be convinced to stay in their country, in their town, if their actual day-to-day was improved.
Sure. I mean, if you make where people are living better, then obviously it reduces their urge to feel like they have to leave. So, I mean, that definitely, you know, can be a solution as well.
I think that's something that we should, and we spend so much money on foreign aid that is just utterly wasted. Yeah.
Well, we'll keep an eye on next week and see if Trump's threat comes to fruition. You know who isn't going to be around next week to see it, Brian? We lost a legend this week. Gloria Vanderbilt, age 95,
this one hurt me.
Fashion
this one.
Icon, passing away. I wasn't sure of the cause of death. Had you have you read up on that?
Cause of death was a heart attack.
Okay. But again, 95, a good life, you know, someone that really changed the fashion world in her time.
Yes.
Someone, I mean...
Also, she also died of a broken heart because she had no grandchildren.
Well, that is sad. She is, of course, the...
Allegedly.
The mother of CNN's Anderson Cooper. I mean, his friend Andy Cohen does have a kid now. So, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Her other son... Do you know how he died?
I did not.
Jumped out of a window from her apartment.
Ooh, that's how do you come back from that?
She was in the apartment at the time, watched her son go out onto the patio, and jump right over the ledge.
I did not know that. That is messed up.
Anderson Cooper, I read his first autobiography. He was in a car in Manhattan, got a call that he had to rush home. As he rushed home, there were police cars all over the place, and his brother had jumped out of a window.
Hmm. Now, if only there was someone just around tragic. That could give Ms. Vanderbilt the kind of eulogy that she deserves. Brian,
no.
Are you up to it?
I can't do
Brian,
it. No, Ron,
this,
I just
this is
can't.
Vanderbilt. She's a legend. She is
I know that,
the
but I can't do it, Ron.
Of Anderson Cooper. This is
I'm not
what,
prepared.
This is why you get the big bucks. People
but
are
I can't.
Listening
I just...
this week just to hear what you have to say about her.
Gloria, you fucking died this week. Dying like you were somebody. Born in 1942. Born into American royalty, known as Anderson Cooper's wind mom. So we shall give you a musical a little bit, because we know you're worth it. I really don't remember what you ever accomplished, yet all the media's missing you. Missing Gloria. Gloria, don't you think you did enough? You were so damn wealthy. Why'd you have to make jeans in the damn 80s? They were so fucking tacky. I'm missing Gloria. Gloria.
And we're all better for it. Thank you, sir. Thank you for that.
It's off the top of my head. Just off the top of my head.
I mean, unbelievable as always. So rest in peace, Gloria. Our condolences going out to Anderson Cooper and whoever else is fans of Gloria Vanderbilt.
Speaking of condolences, I also want to throw a big condolence out to New York State.
Because?
They passed a bill this week approving driver's license to illegal immigrants.
Yeah, so, and I know you had forwarded me an article on this, and I'm...
Which I know you read.
I did, and I'm still not 100% certain why this law got passed. I mean, it seemed like a majority of the state was against it. Even the Democrats seemed confused as to why they were voting for it. You're there in New York. Give me the reasoning behind this.
Ron, the word on the street is that, I think what you're seeing here is the swing to the far progressive left that is going on within this country, just as much as the Republican Party is swinging to the right. It is almost as if we are experiencing an ongoing test to see who can prove to be further progressive in the Democratic Party. I mean, you've got here, there was not a particular clamoring for driver licenses for illegal immigrants. There was no large group. However, once again, New York State has decided that this is something that needed to be done. I do understand the benefits that you've got. I happen to live in a major metropolitan area, which has a very strong public transportation system. I do understand once you get out of it, people do need to start becoming a little bit more dependent on vehicles. Without a driver's license, it becomes more difficult to get from point A to point B. And as I said earlier, as a business model, America does need illegal immigrants that we can take advantage of by paying below market rate for labor. However, one of the things that just seems to happen, and this is my confusion, is that if somebody has a driver's license, are they now eligible to go out and get insurance? Or is this just simply so they can have an ID card that says, my name is Joe Thompson?
If somebody has a license and is operating a motor vehicle, the expectation is that that motor vehicle is going to be registered and they're going to have insurance on it.
Well, that's You know, it's the normalization of illegal immigration. It's New York is at the forefront. If only they had decided to tackle legal marijuana laws instead of illegal driver licenses
or prostitution. I think they punted on that one as well.
They keep talking about that. Not going to happen. Once again, I'm going to have to stick to Pornhub.
Well, there's already a clerk in Erie County, New York, that's planning on filing a lawsuit in federal court. You know, he is challenging it on a number of levels. You know, he feels that it's inconsistent with federal law, might be a violation of the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986. And he's also concerned about, you know, his potential legal, you know, what could happen to him if he's granting these licenses to illegal immigrants.
Oh, that's horseshit, and that's more horseshit, and that's the definition of shit. He is no different than the woman, the county clerk in that southern town who was refusing to give wedding licenses to homosexual couples and was taken to court. Kim Basinger was her name.
Yes,
I believe.
You nailed it.
Also, it's no different than the bakery that refused to make a wedding cake for a gay couple. This is just once again someone sitting there saying my sensibilities are offended and therefore I'm going to refuse to do my job. This man is somebody that is being paid by the government. It's not his fucking place to not do what he's being told. Just like in Nazi Germany, when the government tells you to do something, you fucking do it. Also, I mean, literally, this Juan Daniels is kicking my ass. Also, I'm bleeding out of my ass right now, so I may not be around for episode 60 next week. But I will also say that I think this law is once again a... it's another example of people trying to push their views on the majority. I don't believe that the majority of people in New York State want illegal immigrants to have driver licenses. I think this is a progressive aspect of the Democratic Party that are sitting there saying we want to make we want to grow our base, so let's make let's start reaching out to the fringes. It's New York's version of the Alabama abortion law.
All right. So moving on from
where do we go
from
there?
One dangerous spot to another. Revisiting the Dominican Republic. We talked about last week all of the fatalities that had happened. Some updates this past week. We have two more American tourists that are reported to have died. Jerry Curran, 78, and Layla Cox, 53.
Do you know what Layla Cox's favorite drink was?
I do not.
Juan Daniels.
We also have 47 people out of a group of 114 that traveled from Oklahoma to the Dominican Republic for a meeting of the Jimmy Buffett fan club this past April.
No, there's no way you could just slide right through that. There's no way you slide that in here and just continue moving on. You're telling me that the Jimmy Buffett Appreciation Society goes to the Dominican Republic and not Key West?
Apparently, in the group from Oklahoma, there was 114 of them that went to the Dominican Republic. And out of that 114 this past April, 47 of them became violently ill during their trip. And then earlier this month, we have 7 kids on a senior trip from Deer Creek High School that have been staying at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana. They became violently ill. As you mentioned earlier in the episode, bootleg alcohol is being looked at as a possible cause of the deaths and sickness. The Dominican Republic has had issues in the past with adulterated alcohol, which is typically methanol added to alcohol, or just straight methanol, which is very toxic. And back in 2017, the Dominican National Police dismantled 5 labs used for the manufacturing of alcohol that was not safe for human consumption. The funny thing, Brian, you want to know what the funny thing is?
Ron?
Yes.
What's the funny thing?
When you look at the numbers, it shows that the Dominican Republic has not become more dangerous. The number of deaths of United States citizens is actually lower this year at this point than in previous years. The U.S., yes.
I did some further research, and I'll tell you exactly why that is.
Okay.
because the numbers of alcohol poisonings have increased. However, dramatically, the number of shootings and aggravated assaults has gone down.
And they also apparently do not track the number of illnesses, so it's hard to compare if those numbers are higher.
Also, baseball players are getting shot at an increasing rate in the Dominican Republic.
It was just a big misunderstanding. They meant to shoot the guy next to him, apparently.
Shout out to Big Poppy.
So still somewhat dangerous to go to the Dominican Republic.
Do yourself a favor. If you are deciding that you want to go on vacation and you're an American tourist, make the right decision. Go to Oklahoma. Go visit the Jimmy Buffett's Appreciation Society. And you say to them, show me a good time.
All right. What else do we have this week, Brian? Oh, we have Donald Trump had his big ABC News 30-hour special this past week, which we heard. Should I play the clip?
This was shocking to me because this was the first time in for as long as I can remember where Donald Trump did not give an extensive interview to the softball press over at Fox News. He went up against the powerhouse of George Stephanopoulos on ABC.
Yes, and this was one of the interchanges we heard.
You're going to turn it over?
No, at some point, I might. But at some point, I hope they get it because it's a fantastic financial statement. It's a fantastic financial statement. And let's do that over. He's coughing in the middle of my answer.
Yeah, okay.
I don't like that, you know?
Your chief of staff.
If you're going to cough, please leave the room.
Get a shot of, and I'll come over here.
You just can't.
Just a chance of shot. Okay. Sorry.
So Trump is a known germaphobe. Clearly also does not like people coughing around him.
I definitely understand.
Don't cough while we're doing the podcast. What? Take it out of the goddamn room if you're going to do that. I don't care if your insides are leaking out through your anus.
I'm sorry. It's just that we're doing the podcast, so I don't know where you want me to go.
Is this a good angle for me? We'll do it again. It's a fabulous financial statement. That's my favorite thing. It's a fabulous financial statement.
Fabulous financial statement.
I wish you could see it. I wish I had some way. So I'm the president of the United States, and I can sign executive orders for any horse shit I want, but I can't give you my financial statement because the lawyers are holding off.
What I love is that he's such a fucking moron. And don't get me wrong. The illegal immigration and the anti-Hillary Clinton really were just two issues that got people to vote for him. And I give him a lot of credit for that. But there's absolutely nobody that can sit there and say that this man is an intelligent strategist. He's a fucking moron. And for him to sit there and describe his tax statements, it's a fabulous financial statement.
It's fantastic.
He's coughing. I don't like that. What an embarrassment. He's genuinely an embarrassment to this country.
No question.
Sorry, that was just I went off on a little bit of a tirade.
All right, and one last thing we wanted to hit on this week. Today is, of course, Juneteenth. That is celebrated. It commemorates the June 19th, 1865 announcement of the abolition of slavery in Texas and the Confederacy. As we know, the Emancipation Proclamation was signed on January 1st, 1863, but not enforced in the southern states until the Confederacy fell, so hence Juneteenth. And part of the activities today, there were conversations on Congress regarding reparations. Brian, interested to hear your take on reparations for slavery.
Completely impractical. I think that there is something to be said for the fact that African Americans were brought to this country enslaved and were freed, but were not in any way given the type of support. There was no welfare at the time. There was no, hey, listen, we're going to give you something just to keep your head above water. It's not shocking when you look at it from a sociological perspective, as the historical fan that I am, that the as a whole, that the African American community has not prospered in this country as equally as other communities that were here that were not brought in through slavery. I don't believe that you can sit there and just pull a number out of somebody's ass, print up a slew of money, hand it over to them, and then suddenly you're going to have a level playing field.
But you don't think that something could be done to counteract the social economic inequities that have been created due to the slavery issue?
I think we had affirmative action, and I think we had
big yawn.
You got to keep that in there. I think, but seriously, honestly, I've never yawned in the podcast. Suddenly I'm drinking Juan Daniels and I'm feeling a little lightheaded. I am sitting in a pool of not only my own body excrement, but I think I just passed a lung through my rectum. If anybody's out there listening, please help. Send help.
So let me throw.
So all joking aside, no, I don't believe that reparations is going to solve the problem.
All right. So let me give you some statistics that you may find interesting. So let's take your average white male in the United States retires at age 64 on average, having earned $2 million in his lifetime. An African American male will need to work to age 85.
Jesus Christ.
To earn that same amount. An African American female will need to work to age 105.
No.
Those are the statistics, my friend. So when there is such a glaring gap, don't you feel that something needs to be done about that?
Something needs to be done, and I don't believe that the government writing a check is going to solve the problem, because I believe that if you hand money to somebody that has not been given the opportunity in their lifetime to understand the importance of budgeting, the importance of securing a financial future, I don't believe that you're handing it to them and the right things are going to happen.
So what if the program were set up so that, the money that they were given had to be earmarked and that, certain portions of it could only be used for housing or improving the house that you live in, for education, for transportation, for, whatever. Rather than just saying, here's a check for $150,000, instead, kind of like we do with the SNAP program, you get, I don't know what it would look like, if it would be a credit card that could only be used for certain services or things of that nature. Because again, think about what that would do, not only to help the African-American community, but how would that help the economy of the United States in general if there was that influx of spending?
Ron, the country's full. We can't take any more. You're not welcome. We're full. The sectors are full. I don't know how many other ways I got to say this.
I understand.
No, I. You know what? There's something to be said for that. Where it's this is money to be used for your retirement years. Maybe. I don't know. But then there's also the argument of, I wasn't around during slavery. My ancestors didn't enter this country until the early 1900s.
But you've also benefited from white privilege.
That's not true.
You have not benefited from white privilege?
I have never crossed the street against the light in front of a police car. I've never had interactions with the police where they caught me holding stolen property and told me to put it down and walk away. I've never benefited from white privilege
that you know of.
I am as woke as the next person. Do you feel you've benefited from white privilege?
No question.
How?
I guarantee that I've benefited in ways that I don't even know how.
Oh my gosh! So you're going with the flying spaghetti defense?
I'm not going with the flying spaghetti defense, but how many jobs?
You're just saying that you believe that you've benefited by ways you're not even aware
of. Wait. How many jobs have I gotten because the person doing the hiring was only going to consider white males? So maybe I was the best person out of the group of white males that was being considered for that job, but I wasn't necessarily the best person that they could have had for that job.
Okay, that's something to be said. I would say, you know what I think we should do? Do you think that we should turn down our slot at the upcoming Philadelphia Podcast Festival and offer our slot to a podcast that is run by minorities?
I mean, if that would lift someone up, I would be willing to let them partner with us.
Define partner.
We'd give them 5 minutes.
Fuck, I wouldn't give them a minute. This is our time to shine. I genuinely do think that we need to start hyping this. July 20th,
1 month away.
Saturday, 12:30 p.m. Nice and early, but not too early. You got time to wake up, have breakfast, go to the gym, shower, trim your pews.
Please shower.
Then get dressed, get in your car, drive to Philadelphia. In the neighborhood in Philly is it?
Fifth and South, Tattooed Mom.
Right there on South Street. Walk in, bring me a cheesesteak at 12:30. Ron and I are going to be doing our podcast, what you're listening to right now. We're going to be doing it live in front of an audience. You can be in that audience. Audience.
Tickets are free. First come, first served.
It's possible that the room's going to be packed. It's possible it's going to be empty. What is definite is that it's not going to change the content of what Ron and I are going to do. Part of me sees this as the crowning achievement of our efforts over the past year. We're going to have merch. We're going to have baseball caps. We're going to have stickers. We're going to have shot glasses so that we're all going to be able to share our drink of the podcast.
Don't forget our magnets.
Also magnets. I mean, this is going to be something special. If you're in Philadelphia or you live in the Northeast and you're available, mark it on your calendar. Saturday, July 20th. 12:30 p.m. Mother Toads. It is
Tattooed
going
Mom.
Down. Okay, why the fuck did I come up with the wrong
Probably
name?
Probably because you're losing your innards through your rectum right now.
Mother Toads actually is the name of the Dominican bar where Big Poppy allegedly was shot.
Seriously, was he shot? Yes, he was shot.
So what's the name of the place again?
Tattooed Mom. Fifth and
oh,
South
Street. Tattooed Mom. Do they do tattoos while there?
I don't believe they do. But there are tattoo parlors on South Street if you want to get some ink.
I would do a Ron and Brian tattoo.
Ron and Brian would podcast tattoo. I'm up for it.
Would you do one of the logo?
I'm not against it.
I would do it if you did.
Well, we'll have to discuss that. But I'm definitely open to it.
Yeah, so let's maybe Ron and I go out and get tattoos. And if you're a listener, we'll pay for you to get a tattoo.
Can I get it on my butt cheek? Is that open for discussion?
You can get it anywhere you want.
All right.
I was hoping to get mine over my heart.
There you go. Well, I already have one over my heart, so I can't, you know.
What do you have in your heart?
I have a I Ching symbol for chaos over my heart. It was back when back when I was an angsty youngster. Yeah, shit you not. I'll show you the next time I see you.
Please.
All right. Well, I don't think we have too much else to cover. Thank you, as always, for joining us. Head on over to iTunes, rate, review, subscribe. Check out the Facebook and Twitter polls for both This Week in Racism and Drink of the Week.
And if you prefer to listen to our podcast on YouTube, go find us there, Ron and Brian Podcast. The nice people over at Podbeam are creating a link right there, a video file. I mean, it's not of us recording this episode, but you can listen to the podcast right there on YouTube. So wherever you like to listen to us, we are there.
And you can always go to ronandbrianpodcast.com if you don't want to download anything. There is a player right on the homepage. Also, don't forget, if you want some stickers, go to the website, go to the contact us page, send us your address. We'll get those out in the mail to you. As always, they'll be at the live show on July 20th.
And if you've been following us on social media, what we've done is that we've had quite a few listeners that have reached out to us on the different social media and have requested stickers. So what we've done is we've asked them, hey, if you're going to, we'll mail you the stickers for free, but take a picture of the sticker when you've put it up in your hometown and send us a copy of it. So if you go to our social media, Ron and Brian on Instagram, I think we put a couple up on Twitter and Facebook, you'll see some of the stickers that are out there. I myself may or may not have put one up in Times Square, New York City, just because I'm a rebel and I rebel. So if you want some stickers, go to the contact page on our website, fill out your home address. Ron and I will not be showing up personally to deliver these, but you will get a envelope. There will be some white powder in there. No, it will not be cocaine. No, it will not be anthrax. Be a little bit of baby powder, just because you want to keep your nutsack a little dry during this very warm, warm summer months. But you'll also get some stickers to slap up there.
All right. Well, we're going to head on out for another week. Again, thanks for joining us. Go to the Facebook, go to the Twitter, go to the Instagram. But most of all, come back and join us next week.